Sandy.
Boy, how's the guy? There's been a time or two here. I got this in a mess like that one time. That neck is on Tuesday night. I ended up got it in a mess and come up time for the net. And I had to unhook it and hook an HT up on it to do the net because it took me a little bit while longer to get this 8900 straightened out. That, if y'all look up on what Google or whatever, that classic Clag FM28. It's frequency synthesized, but as you well know, it's a very early 2-meter transceiver. It's easy to operate, no problem. But back in those days, there wasn't tone boards on radios. And let's see, there's 16 here, 8-2, 7-9 most of the time on sassafras carries well. The 1-9, last I remembered on Mitchell, was carrier's welts. The 7-6 on Pisgah's at. And two of those I can't even get here any good at all, but those are the only repeaters remaining in this area that's just carrier's welts. Rest of the ones in there, you got to have that tone to bring them up with, so those antique values have very limited abilities you can do with, but I found that radio out at the Pickens Flea Market, that Clag FM28. Mandel still got it over there. I told him I was going to keep it regardless, just for a, even though it does have limitations. And AK, when he got first two meter radio I got, gave me a Clag Mark III. It's a crystal controlled 2-meter transceiver. It's, you know, it'll work fine right here on 16 fine, on 8-2, on 7-9, but it's crystal controlled. The Mark III is, and there's no tone board in it. So, this radio gear of today compared to the prehistoric gear, when it comes to knowing what you're doing with, it's like day and night. Ain't I right, Gary? KI4DOS, you still there? KI4LZI.
DOS, yeah, Andy, you're right. I still got a 2-meter here that I made a tone board for it. I took a touchpad out of an old telephone and made a touchpad for it so I could put the tones in. But I still got one of those here. And the antique, the older radios were a lot of fun. I've got a... Well, I don't have it anymore. I got rid of it. I had an RF-403. That was a neat little monster. It had a separate transmit section and a separate receive section. It was like you had a transmitter and a receiver side by side. And they were in the same cabinet, but you could have used that thing for a repeater. But now the old radios... didn't have tone boards and a lot of other things. they were a lot of fun. And if you want to see one of these days, Chad, next time you're over here, I'll see if I can dig it out of the closet.
I'll take a look at it. So two things I want to add to Daniel and what you and Andy are saying is the first thing, Daniel, is as you move or start to grow in this hobby, the buttons that you need on that radio will present themselves. In other words, when you upgrade your license to HF, or if you decide to hang around on the 10-meter band for a while, some of those buttons that you don't know what they do will present themselves when you have a need to get on HF. So don't worry about the ones that you don't know about, because the ones that you don't know about, you don't need to know about them. But when you move over to the HF side, there'll be three or four more buttons there that you'll go, hey, now I know what that button does. When you move into digital modes, you're going to say the same thing. Hey, I know what that button does. And Morse code and 440 or, you know, that's the way that's going to play out. And that's the way I think it should play out. Don't worry about what those do until you have a need for it. Know what the buttons do so that if you can get a button that does a convenience feature for you, you kind of know where that is and what that does. But I wouldn't worry about it because I know when I got the radio in, I was thinking, I am not going to tell my wife that we paid $1,100 for this radio and I could have got by with a $75 used 2-meter radio. And I remember, you know, sitting in front of the radio saying that out loud. Boy, you big dummy. Man, don't you tell her that. But after a while, I started to realize that, you know, as I started messing around with it and needed to do different things with it, that's when I realized, okay, well, that's how this is going to play out. So don't worry about it. The second thing I'll tell you is that when I got my license, a tech license, and didn't have a radio. So I got a little mobile rig to use temporarily, and it took me 4 days. 4 days. And pretty much 4 to 5 hours a day trying to get that stinking thing to work. And I just remembered day three, I came up to the top of the house from the shop. And she said, "Did you get it?" Because I had the radios in the shop at the time. And I said, "No, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I can hear people talk, but I can't. They won't talk to me. Or I'm not doing something right." So before I lead into what happened, I'm going to tell you, it's very helpful to be married to a teacher. Because my wife's, I'd like to add, and I'm ashamed to say, for my part, a special ed teacher. Because she deals with children with special needs. And her husband falls right into that category. So let me break here and I'll be right back. Third day, I came up the top of the hill just absolutely frustrated. So she said, "What is the problem?" And I said, "Well, this repeater book app I'm using is telling me that I need to be at 146.610. And I am on 146.610. I can hear people talk, but I can't talk." So she said, "Well, you know, what else needs to be done?" I said, "Well, it's got to have a negative drop on it, and it's got to have a PL tone." She didn't know what any of that was, but she was smart enough to realize that I've got to word this a certain way to him so that he knows what that means. So this is what she came up with, which is very, very good for me. She said, "I want you to imagine that you have a shopping cart and you're going into Walmart. I want you, when you get that shopping cart and you go down the first aisle, pick up the carrier off of the shelf and put it in the shopping cart." So in other words, pick up 146.610 and put it in the shopping cart. Then you're going to go down the next aisle and you're going to pick up a PL tone and you're going to throw that in the shopping cart. Then go down the next aisle and put a negative drop in the shopping cart. Then you're going to go to the cashier and pay for it. When you go through the cashier station, that's when all of those get paid for. can't enjoy any of those until you pay for them. And then they clicked. Okay. In order for me to enjoy everything that that frequency has to offer, i.e. accessing the repeater, I went through that in my mind. In my mind, I literally went down the aisle in Walmart and threw that frequency in the buggy, and then the PO tone, and then the drop. Well, it's no PO tone on this frequency, but there is on other frequencies. And once I figured out who the cashier was on my radio, that's when I was able to make everything work. So the first contact I made was with you or Daniel, or one of you, I forget, or, Daniel, or, he calls the, it's Daniel. And I got on the radio, 2 meter now, and I thought, well, maybe this is it. Now that I've gone through the cashier and paid for all this, let me give it a shot. So I heard Dave and Steve talking, and I butted right in. I didn't know what else to say, so I just said, CQ, CQ, CQ. And when I heard one of them politely correct me, and I knew that they heard me. And even though I messed up and what I did was wrong, I was jumping up and down because, and I remember dancing in front of the radio going, I messed up, I messed up, but he heard me.
Yeah, totally. Like, when I got that little stupid Bofang, I could hear people talking like crazy, and I could not get anybody to talk back to me, and I was just like, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm being ignored. I cannot believe this is going on. I am totally being ignored. And so I would wait for there to be a pause in the conversation before I chimed in, and nobody would respond, and I finally figured out I didn't have, like, that negative set. And so, yeah, exactly what you're saying, Chad, makes, like, perfect sense now, but I didn't have a clue then. But I remember, I mean, you already know, you and Patrick were my first contacts, and came back as I could only call outside on the back patio. That was the only place where I could kind of even hit the repeater. I came inside grinning from ear to ear, and my wife was like, what the heck are you so happy about? And she's like, did you finally make contact? And I was like, yes, it finally happened.
Nobody's going to take it. Let me see if I got it. Gary, does any of that sound familiar to y'all? I mean, did y'all have to go through that when you started off, or is this just... like my wife says, you are so special, honey. After 10 or 15 years, I finally figured out what she was saying. You are definitely special.
I'll agree with her.
Well, see, I'm looking on now is the first up-to-date radio I had that I'm talking on now. I started that with that Mark III Clegg that was crystal controlled, no tone board. Like I said, no problem with this repeater. No problem with 7.9. To bring up 8.2, it didn't have crystals in it for the Pisgah or Mitchell. It didn't. And it only runs, the Mark III only runs 15 watts. And back at that time, I didn't have this diamond up. I was using a aluminum J-pole that AK made for me that's where currently my 220 ring goes at now. So I wouldn't have been able to probably got out as well with these as I would this diamond anyway, because it wasn't a gain antenna, so to speak. I used that for, I guess, 2 or 3 months. I run across that FM-28 out of the flea market. I tried using it for a little bit. It, you note right here where there's no tone on it. Done okay. And I got this one here that I'm on now. It's 8900 from AES in March. But I got my tech license in October. So it was about a month or so. See, it was then about a month or two when I run into AK again out at the flea market, and he gave me that Mark III, and I used it for a while. Then I run across that other one, the frequency synthesized one out there, that same flea market, sometime then later, and the FM-28 had a deviation problem that needed some work tended to, and I finally, after I put in order for this 8900R, I got it, and like I was saying earlier about complexity, if I didn't have WR4XM to help me with this radio here, I would have been in big trouble. Because getting the tones in and all you say about all the different menus and all, it'll sure do a number to you. KI4LZI. Go ahead, Gary.
Wes, you're talking about your very first radio. The first radio I had was an HTX202. That's a Radio Shack 2-meter HT. And that was my first radio that I had. First ham radio, I'll put it that way. Better straighten that out a little bit. But I've picked up all sorts of radios and been through a bunch of them since then. Still got some old stuff. But I like the older stuff. You don't have all the menus. You got knobs and switches, and you flip this switch and turn this knob and go from there. It's a lot easier for me because I'm old. And I like them antique things like me. But they seem to be easier for me to operate than the menu-driven things. But there again, to drive a truck, you don't have to use a computer a whole lot. And I didn't use computers for years and years. And I fell behind on all the electronics and all the way the things are programmed and this sort of thing. So I'm playing catch up now, but I ain't doing too good at it, but I'm still working at it.
KO4NUE. KI4DTY. Yeah, I guess for me, even learn, like, I'm brand new. I mean, I know Chad and Patrick are too, I guess, but I'm just brand new in general, even with just getting the radio. I had gotten that Chad, I have that Yaesuit FT2980. You recommended it, and I went on and I bought it because I had no clue where to go, what to do, where to start, nothing. Like I said, I took the test, and they said, you pass the test, you'll have your call sign in a couple days, and that was it. I didn't even get a pat on the back. It was just walked out the door, and here I had a license and had no clue where to start, what to do, who to even talk to. I didn't know what the stuff to do. And so when you told me about the FT2980, that was our first call, or my first call on the radio. And so that was, if you believe it or not, that was August when I got this radio, the 2980, and started trying to figure out how to program it. And so, let me make sure I still have this. Just brand new to overall, and yeah, with this 991, it's just like, dad just handed me the keys to the Corvette, and there's all these buttons and switches and this gas pedal, and I just hammer down on it, and the rear end breaks loose, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Hey, guys, I got to run, take the dog outside. I may be back in a little bit. If I do, I'll holler back and throw my call sign out. Be enjoying listening to you fellas this evening, and y'all have a good evening, what's left. Good night. There ain't much left of the evening. A great day tomorrow, and glad everybody had fun today. I don't know who all's in there. I know KO4NUE, KI4DTY, KI4LZI is in there, and anybody else, KI4DOS, 73.
73, Gary. Have a nice night, sir.
And later, KI4LZI.
Gary. I'll take it. Let me check see if I got it. With, you know, the being retired and being in a communication unit and went and got my tech license, I took a picture, laid the picture, I mean the CSCE form on the seat, took a picture of it, and got on 85 to head back home, and I was just sending everybody the picture of the completion form. And, you know, I was going down 85, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. This is radio, and blah, 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 you know. I went to Gastonia to take the test, so by the time I got home, I done had it figured in my mind that, you know, I know all there is to know about a radio. All I need, I got my license, and that's that. And just imagine the frustration after the first day when I set the thing up and, you know, I remember taking the radio out of the box, the 2980, and I had the owner's manual with it, and I remember looking at it, and I said, I don't need that. What do I need that for? So I just laid it on the table. It took me halfway through day two to say, maybe I better go get the manual. And then some, you know how you pick up a manual sometimes or instructions on how to put something together? It's kind of like in a man's mind, you just kind of comb through it and you say, yeah, I don't need that tool. Or, yeah, I can skip that step. I can, you know, look, well, let me put this backing on first instead of, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. So by day three, I done had a highlighter out highlighting what I needed to know in the manual. So I came from I know all there is to know to let me go find something to highlight all this, because I'm just not, something's not right. And then what makes it worse is that you don't, who you going to call? I mean, how many people do you know around you that is a ham radio operator? So I've got a stepbrother that's a truck driver. So I called him. And he says, well, turn it to channel 19. Or turn it to channel, he's always somebody on channel 23. And I'm thinking, what is he talking about? There ain't no channel 19 on this radio. And then I realized, okay, well, this is not a CB radio. And you know, I didn't have anybody to call. So my whole journey with this, you know,
ham radio side has been that way. So by the time I started listening into the net, I listened for a long time because I didn't know anything about it. And I then got blistered on the radio and got deflated a little bit or put in my place. So by the time I was able to get to a net, no, you keep your mouth shut because you don't know what you're doing. And you're going to get on the net and somebody's gonna chap you. And you just need to listen for a while. And that went on for, I don't know, months maybe or more. And finally, I had been monitoring one day and heard Walt talking about having some training classes. And I just said, you know what? I've had enough of this. This fear and trepidation that I'm experiencing with this thing is doing nothing but holding me back. That's all it's doing. And, you know, if I get on there and I say something wrong, then I'm committed to doing this, and I'm not going to let anybody drive me off. As long as I don't break the law on the radio, then I'm good. And I'm glad I did that. I am so glad I did that, because there's no telling where I'd be right now. I'd still be struggling trying to figure things out. And I still struggle with it. I do. It's hard trying to learn new things. But, boy, it sure is nice to know now that when I'm struggling with something, I can pick up this radio and ask somebody for help, and they're gonna help me. But it took a while to get to that point. But you're doing just fine, Daniel. Those buttons on that radio, trust me, when it's time for you to know, you'll know. And that's just the way it is. So just don't sweat it.
Thank you very much. And I definitely have appreciated yours and Patrick's and everybody out there who has helped me through this. But, hey, Chad, I need to step away from the mic for a second. I need to go say some goodbyes. You guys know what I'm doing. But I'm going to try to get back on in just a few minutes. This is KI4DTY. I'll be on away for a second.
If I don't hear from you, 73, have a good night. All right, Andy, go ahead.
There's one thing about all this radio gear today. Of course, it'll never happen. But the fact that you got things between different radio companies that won't allow it to happen. The way all these radios are built, especially with the programming part of it, I wish that was universal. But due to copyrights and all stuff like that, that'll never be, but I wish that it was. Really do wish it was, because if you learn it good for one, if it was like that, it would work for the other one just as well, but copyright business will never let that happen. But those older radios, other than they don't have tone boards, or like my Mark III, that was crystal control frequency limited, they were very, very, very simple radios.
Well, I'm just, I'm honestly glad for the struggle. I mean, that's part of the enjoyment of it. It's not fun when you're there. But, you know, I remember on day 3, I think, my dad came down to the shop. And I remember him coming in the door in the shop, and he says, "Are you still messing with that thing?" He says, "Why did you even go to all that trouble to get your license? And there's nobody on there to talk to. And I said, yes, there is. I can hear them. I can hear them. And he said, well, why aren't you talking on it? And I didn't know what to tell him. You know, I didn't know what to say. And finally, he just looked at me and he says, boy. And they always, you know, we pick at one another. I don't want you to think I'm saying anything about my dad, but, you know, we kind of pick and carry on and play pranks on each other all the time. He looked at me and he says, ooh, boy, he said, if you're going to be dumb, he said, you got to be tough. And he says, boy, you are one tough cookie. And that just motivated me even harder. I said, you son of a gun, I'm going to figure this out. And when I do, you going to come down here and watch me talk on it. And when I did, I figured it out. It was Dave, W4DJW, that I was talking to. And I keyed the mic, and I just remembered Daddy was standing there in front of the radio, and I done got a bob in my head. You know how when you get mad at somebody and you bob your head at them, you know, to add some body language to it. I was steady talking to Dave just like, bleh, bleh, bleh. I forget what I was saying, but I'm standing there in front of that, and I'm just bobbing my head back and forth like, look at me, I did it. And he just, you know, he said, you sure did. He said, it took you 4 days, but you did it.
Where else the guy? Time of any kind of disaster, you don't have time to go through all this nonsense. You know, it's trying to figure out how to do this with this radio, that with this radio, and that with this radio. Places like these EOCs, for the radios, you know, that's just my opinion, but for the radios like it's out there, like that, amateur radios anyway, there needs to be, you saw these things where they got, where they make a shortcut like type thing, where they'll sell for you for the radio, to where you can at least program the basics in it. That something like that needs to be at all these EOCs where they got amateur radio gear in. Because if you got should have a real true disaster, you don't have time to go through all this, taking 3 or 4 days to program this stuff. And I would be the same way or possibly worse if I didn't have Mandel here helping me out.
You're exactly right, Andy. That's a tough one. So I bought a little, after I got my big Yaesu in and started, you know, was able to get on 2 meters and, you know, mess around for a little bit with it. I bought a little handy talkie to take with me up to the deer camp. And it was kind of the same way. I decided to go down to the river, and I was going to program the thing down at the river. And I'm thinking in my mind, now I done learned a horrible lesson, you know, weeks before that. And so I went and sat down beside the river and just said, okay, you know, I should be able to do this. And, you know, let me get my shopping cart and let me put my frequency in it and this, that, and the other. And I did it. It didn't take me 4 days either, but I did it. But, you know, you're exactly right. You need to, it's not about, for me, it's not all about just talking. I like to conversate with people and listen to them and be helpful and things like that. But there's a lot more to it, and that is,
you know, anybody can key the mic and talk, but being able to master the radio, oh man, that's kind of a big deal, you know, because, and I think the thing that I struggle with the most is just, for example, my two boys. You know, because I tore their bedroom apart when they moved out and turned it into a ham shack. So they, you know, they're already mad at me. But, you know, when I tell them, hey, I got my, you know, amateur radio license and, you know, come in here and look at this and look at that. And my middle son was in here last week and I turned on the radio and picked up the mic and put a call out there and somebody answered. And I cleared and turned around and looked at him like, hey, you know, isn't that great? I mean, just look at what I just did, you know? And he's looking at me and he's going like, is that it? And I'm thinking, yes, that's it. It took me 5 months to do this. And all you got to do is say, that's it. But, you know, it's you're right, Andy. It's hard to, you know, when you need the radio in a hurry, it's not easy to program. It is not. And I agree with you. That's something that should be universal and easier to do. But I agree with you. I don't think that's going to ever happen. KO4NUE and KI4LZI. KK4JBQ, you've hiding down there in the weeds?
Chris?
KI4LZI.
Hey, Chad. I don't know who else is in there now. Chad, is Anna still around?
Gary.
In here talking with Joey, and she reminded me, I was telling her about Hannah's sister, and Hannah going up to get that clawfoot tub, and I don't know if they're remodeling their kitchen or not, but I know where an old country sink is. It's got the drain board is porcelain. It's got the porcelain drain board and the porcelain sink if her sister might be interested in it.
She's wanting me to come take a look at it, Gary. I'll give you a holler next week and figure out what to do. She's given me strict instructions on, you know, what these things need to look like, so I done got rather good at it. So I'll come talk to you about it next week. But I'm gonna try one more time. KK4JBQ. KK4JBQ. You in there, Larry? If not, okay, Gary, go ahead.
Y'all were talking about, I carried the dog out for her nightly walk, so she can go to bed here shortly, and it won't bother us till in the morning. So I'll kick back and listen to you, find out what's going on again before I make any more comments. KI4DOS.
KO4HKX.
KI4LCI.
Let me make sure I got it. We's talking about the ugliest man in the world.
About me. As long as you talk about me, you got a good subject and you're leaving somebody else alone.
I'm just aggravating you. We were actually talking about how difficult it is to program radios and, you know, so on and so forth. But, Patrick, I think your call coming first. Go ahead, sir.
Listen to y'all talk about how hard it was to get started. Yeah, I did not know another ham, period, when I got into this hobby. So I had to figure it all out on my own, and YouTube was my friend at that point. And my first little radio was a FT-60. And I had to figure out how to program this thing in, and I fought it, and I fought it for days, just like you did. And then I finally, in that time, I found out the 610 repeater was there, and I could listen to it, but I couldn't talk. And I sat and listened to the net for, I don't know, probably a month before I chimed in after I had my license, and finally figured out how to program this radio. And I'd have to stand out on the porch, leaned over the railing to make contact because that's all I had at the time. And trying to figure out which way to go with what radio and what to get next. And nobody to talk to on it because, like I said, I didn't know anybody. So, yeah, the struggles, I knew all about them.
See who's going to get it. If not, I'll take it.
What?
So, I think the worst part of that whole process was being just, I mean, it was deflating. It really was. It was just like, I have spent all this time studying for this exam, and the exams are difficult enough to where you have to put enough time and effort into them to get through them that you actually feel like you've accomplished something when you get your license. And for me, I know this sounds kind of goofy, but when the FCC, or in my mind, the federal government, recognized me as a licensed amateur radio operator, man, I mean, I got the swellhead. I mean, I was just, you know, look at me. And then to come home, and 4 days go by before I'm even able to talk on the stinking thing. I went from in my mind, when I got my call sign in the mail, or, I mean, when I opened the email and saw my call sign, boy, I mean, me and Anna had, you know, we got a steak and we cooked a nice meal that night to, you know, celebrate. And so I went, in my mind, I went from a hero to a zero in 4 days. Somebody go out there and take it.
KI4, how's the guy? I'm way back. Let's see, they started the volunteer examiner program, I read somewhere in about mid-80s to late 80s, somewhere along in that range. There was a time ordered in for the novice class license, and certain ones could do that. You had to go from here where we are down to an FCC field office in Atlanta, Georgia, to take all the rest class, tech, general, advanced, extra. You had to go down there to a field office to take the licenses unless you happen to be having a field day, a ham fest somewhere nearby. And from what I've heard others tell me that from back in that time, you didn't really get any study material either back at that time, other than, you know, practicing the CW. You better shape up on everything when it comes to the theory part of it, and go prepared for anything from way it was explained to me, how it was way, way, way back. Y'all go ahead and carry on. If y'all are still here when I get back later, I'll be back in here.
KI4L's the guy. You're absolutely correct about that. They used to have to go down to the FCC office. Most people got the ARRL handbook and studied it from cover to cover. Then you had to, when you got down there to take your test, they wanted you to draw out a Colpitts oscillator or oh, several different circuits, things like that. You had to actually draw those out. it was more involved than it is now. There was no question pool. I'm sure that the FCC had some type of question pool there to start with, but to have a, you know, a question pool like we've got now, they didn't have that back then.
For me, I didn't even know how to get a hold of anybody to take the test. And I happened to stumble across a YouTube video that brought up ham study and found out that I could take it online. And that's how I got my tech license and all that. I mean, like I said, I had no clue how to get into it. I'd reached out over Facebook to the Hendersonville Club, and I got some response, but no help in which direction to go over that. And at the time, you couldn't meet face-to-face with anybody because everybody was, COVID was in its beginning, and everybody was scared to death. So, I mean, it was hard to find out any information at all.
KI4DTY, yeah, I'm here. I was just listening.
4NUE. Let me make sure I got it. When I got to a point to go get my license, I did not know that, you know, there was testing in Greenville or Spartanburg. So I got online and just did a Google search and found a testing site in Gastonia, North Carolina. So I go to drive all the way to Gastonia to take the test on a Saturday morning. And I gotta be just straight up honest and tell you that when I left that testing facility, I was not sure that I wanted to be involved in this hobby just because of the way the test was conducted and what I saw inside the room where we tested. We met at a church there in Gastonia, and they had VEs there. I think there were like five or six of them there, and they were up in their age. You could tell they had been doing this for a long time. But there were 36 people in that little room, and there was a group of seven that came in late, five males and two females. And like Patrick reminded, that it was during the beginning of COVID, and they came in with masks over their nose and face that had a skull, but you know, a skull, S-K-U-L-L, drawn on the mask, dressed in full camouflage. Two of the guys had on battle gloves that, you know, had knuckle busters on them and things like that. You know, just almost militant. I mean, that's the word, only word I can describe. So we get ready to take the test. All the VEs had separated the desks, the chairs, so that you could only have four people sitting at a desk at one time on the corners. Well, these guys and two girls came in, and they just pulled chairs from other tables and slid all seven chairs underneath one table. And the VEs, I
didn't know it at the time, but they knew exactly what they were doing. So we all had to stand up and get in line to get our exam. Well, when they did that, the VEs just got up, two of the VEs got up and went over there and moved the chairs back. And then one of the guys got out of line, and he went over and put the chairs back in place. And he looked at the two VEs almost in defiance. I mean, it was just like, don't move these chairs back again. So when he got back in line, the two VEs got up again, and they went over there and sat in the chairs this time. I guess that's keep from having a confrontation. And they sat in the chairs. And I do believe that they were going to try to cheat on that exam. I don't know that for sure, but I think that's what they were going to try to do. Let me pause and I'll be right back. During the test, I mean, before the first person got their exam to go sit down, the coordinator, I'd say he was probably in his 80s, he stood up and said, hey, just want to welcome everybody. Glad that we've got this many people. Normally we only have two or three people. But the last couple of months has been a full house, and we are just don't understand why we've had such an influx of people coming in to test. And one of the guys in that group, the, you know, I guess we'll just call them a militant group or whatever, he just was outspoken and said, really? He said, are you not paying attention what's going on in this country? And it ended up in a political discussion with the VEs. And just total disrespect. I was embarrassed to have somebody from my generation talk to an older person like that. I mean, I was fuming mad, and I almost said something, and I just, you know, this little voice was going off in my head, boy, you better keep your mouth shut, because as soon as you open your mouth, it's going to be awful, and you're going to end up in some kind of something, and I'm going to end up getting kicked out of here. But it was not a good experience at all. And when we were taking the test, because the VE separated them, they were just totally disruptive, loud, laughing, just rude, very rude. And I think the VEs just, they should have kicked them out, is what they should have done. But they were just so aggressive, I don't think that's why they just didn't do that. But, you know, but I just remember, you know, first 5 or 10 minutes getting home, going down I-85 was just like, I don't know about this. I don't know if this is what I, you know, need to do. But I'm going to end this long, drawn-out story here and say when I went to the test in Greenville, downtown Greenville, at the Red Cross building, boy, you won't talk about it. Now, that's the way it needs to be run. Quiet, you know, just disciplined, and you could actually think and read the question and understand what they were asking you. But I'll drop it there. That's too long as it is. But KO4NUE, somebody else pick it up.
4JKB.
Sir?
Talking about testing sessions for, like, your license?
My first exam in Gastonia, yes, sir.
This is Duncan. I talked to you before, Chad, so you don't gotta call me sir for sure. This is KO4JKV. I'm getting ready to, I'm studying for my general. It's coming up in 3 weeks. I'm really, really, really pressing on it this time. I threatened to take it 3 times last year. And I took my class at the Marion Amateur Radio Society Clubhouse in downtown Marion. And I can't talk to that repeater just because of the mountains, but that's the same place I'm going to take my next thing. And it was very different from what you're describing. It was very quiet and professional. So I hope everything goes good, and they make me take a second test.